Woi woi, woi woi, woi woi. Danny Denko on the radio again. Yo, if you want no smoke free weed, go board yourself. You need to go plant a seed. Go board yourself, make your knowledge increase. Go board yourself, go board yourself, go board yourself. You want no smoke.
All right, you guys, we have a great episode in store for you. This is number 132. We're going to talk a little bit of quick news. Then I want to get right into the interview. We've got John Foster from Gray Area Coffee Shop in Amsterdam as our guest on the show. We're going to do a little grow segment as well and take some questions from you guys. Episode 132, all brought to you by Nature's Heritage, Seeds Here Now, Sweet Leaf Nutrients, Excelsior Extracts, and Prime Superior Inoculant. Coming at you. Whether you're growing from seed or from clone, Prime Superior's simple, safe, and effective products can take your cultivation program to the next level, helping to produce higher quality, naturally healthier plants. Prime Superior offers a two-step process that will benefit any garden. This is possible thanks to Prime Superior's proprietary strain of Bovaria bassania, which is optimized for plants and sets up a symbiosis that increases terpenes, cannabinoids, and yield. Simply coat your seeds to inoculate and aid rapid germination, or dip your clone cutting with the world's first biological cloning honey to improve growth the way nature intended. Next, continue maintenance of your crop with foliar or fog applications of Prime Superior's Drench, which will boost your plant's growth and ensure a heavy harvest. Best of all, the Drench will work with already established gardens, so anyone at any stage of growth can achieve a cleaner crop with better results. I've used this stuff on my own cannabis plants and house plants, and it works amazing. I love the cloning honey. I love the boost that you get from using the Drench. And I just think all your plants will benefit from this, green up and grow better. And honestly, grow more of the essential oils that we're after, the terpenoids and flavonoids and all of that. So now is the time to try Prime Superior, the world's first biological cloning honey, and Grow Bud Yourself listeners can use this code PS420 for 15% off your entire order at primesuperior.com. So don't hesitate, inoculate, and visit primesuperior.com today to learn more. All right, welcome back. As always, thank you to DJ Jacques and Wynn Strong for the incredible tune. We love it. Episode number 132 is here. It's crazy that we've done that many, but here we are. We're still chugging along. How you feeling there, Mike?
Pretty good. I think it's telling that every time we're like, God, I can't believe we've done this many episodes. but yeah, 132, man.
Yeah, it's just kind of a reminder of like, wow, you know. Wow. We've been pumping these things out and you know, people are still listening. So we're doing something right.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, the 420 festivities are over at this point. I had a ton of fun, here in New York celebrating 420. So usually I'm traveling somewhere. But I finally got to participate in the New York 420, Washington Square Park, and all of the just amazing events that were around were just fantastic. It was basically not 420 day, it's 420 week, and turning into 420 month basically at some point.
did you notice that President Biden tweeted out on X or Twitter or whatever we're calling it now, but on 420 at 420, he wrote, quote, "Sending people to prison just for possessing marijuana has upended too many lives and incarcerated people for conduct that many states no longer prohibit." And that included an image with the wording, "No one should be jailed just for using or possessing marijuana." So that was interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I mean, most people, you know, would not think that a president would do that. And I think that that's, you know, there's more to be done, obviously, and we were expecting more, but like, yeah. You wouldn't expect, let's say, his opponent to necessarily tweet something like that.
Or any other president before him in history. You know, really.
Yeah, I don't think any president's ever said it. So you know, it's important. We need more action for sure. And I know that's everybody's response whenever Biden or Kamala Harris says something about legalization. You know, everybody brings up their past and their history of you know, being very prosecutorial and very adamantly, you know, the crime bill and all that. And yes, I know all of that. I'm not stupid. People change and policies change, and there's only so much a president can do. We've seen that over and over. But I am glad that he's saying those things out loud and making it very clear and plainly clear the difference, at least in words, you know, I mean, and indeed. So I, you know, to me, that's an amazing thing to see. And I know obviously there's people out there who would certainly not be satisfied by that or consider that pandering of some kind, but I get it. I understand that that's your stance, but I'm a one issue voter basically. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's important to me to hear a president say something like that. It's historic and it's iconic and it changes things. It changes people's perceptions and minds, even if he's not, you know, boots on the ground, you know, forcing people out of jail and all of that. I mean, he did do some pardons and things. So I don't know. To me, it's definitely a step in the right direction. I'm happy he did it. He could have easily not done it, but he did. So it's pretty historic and pretty powerful as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can feel a change is coming. There's something happening with the, you know, the descheduling, and hopefully descheduling, maybe rescheduling, but something's brewing out there. You know, Earl Blumenthaler also said something along the lines of, this is the last 420 we're going to be celebrating with marijuana on Schedule 1. You know,
fingers crossed.
Yeah, for sure. but yeah. So.
And you wanted to mention a couple of things, including our infamous merch.
Yes. This is the last time I'm pretty much going to be saying something about it. But unless people buy some merch, but we're paying basically about $40 a month to have merch through like Shopify and all of that and Printly or whatever it is. It's our merch. And it's Grow Bud Yourself merch with our logo. There's t-shirts, there's hats, there's all kinds of other stuff. You get to it by going to growbudyourself.com and clicking merch at the top of the site. If we don't sell some merch, I'm not trying to threaten you guys. I'm just letting you know that like, I can't afford to keep having merch. So basically if we don't sell some merch, the merch is going to go away for a while, until we get a demand for it. But, you know, I feel like you guys might be interested in rocking some Grow Bud Yourself gear. And I do think I mentioned on a previous episode that if I see someone wearing our merch, I'm pretty much contractually obligated to at least smoke with them and give them some treats out of my head stash, you know, age appropriate and all of that. But yeah, I don't know. Get some merch. Check us out. You know, support the show. If you can't join Patreon, we're going to put some merch on the Patreon as well. But, you know, if you can't support our Patreon, then support our merch. And even better, do both.
There you go.
But yeah, so there it is. I mean, there's iPhone covers and all kinds of other cool stuff there. There's coffee mugs, you know.
Lots of good stuff. Yeah. Everything you could want. Grow Bud Yourself. Yeah. So go get some merch, man.
So that's the plug for the merch. And then I wanted to plug, of course, the Grow Bud Yourself Academy June 1st celebration. We're collaborating with New York Hydroponics. Our friend Andrew over there, Always Blooming is also the name of the shop, because like he's no longer really selling hydroponic stuff. I mean, he's getting rid of all the salts and the all of that. And he's really focusing on living soil, build a soil. He's a build a soil dealer here in Brooklyn. Anyway, long story short, he and we are collaborating on a celebration of New York home grow being legal as of June 1st. So we're going to celebrate right there on June 1st on Saturday in Brooklyn. Tickets are available in my bio, my link, you know, what we've got tickets available in my bio on Instagram and elsewhere. You can find them. The early bird tickets are only $40. You get a free copy of my book. You get to hang out with us for 3 or 4 hours. Andrew's got an amazing burger truck The burgers are also included in the ticket, so that's complimentary award-winning burgers from Andrew. And the truck there, what's it called? Hard Time Sundays, you know. So even when you go into the ticket link, you'll see links to his famous burgers. And so that's what we'll be serving for this grow class and celebration. So hopefully at least a few of you guys who happen to be in the New York area or nearby New Jersey might come out for that. That's all I'm going to say. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're celebrating home grow, legal home grow in New York. It's going to be June 1st, Saturday at New York Hydroponics / Always Blooming in Brooklyn, Union Street in the Gowanus neighborhood of Brooklyn, easily accessible via subway and otherwise. So hope to see you guys there. And that's my two plugs, merch and celebrating the arrival of home grow in New York. Legal.
Yeah, definitely keep an eye out for that. We're going to have more information. You can get your tickets, you could join us. It's going to be a great event, some a bit of a sesh, a bit of a grow class, and a celebration, as Dan mentioned, of home grow in New York. So good stuff there. Okay, well, with the plugs out of the way, what do you say we hop into a little bit of cannabis news?
Yes, let's do that.
Well, let's start in New York, because that's where we are. And because New York has waited so goddamn long to implement the retail aspect of its adult use law, which was passed by the legislature and signed into law March of 2021, so more than 3 years ago this law was enacted, illegal sales are cropping up all across the state, particularly here in New York City, where essentially every smoke shop and bodega sells some form of cannabis, usually cartridges. Anyway, this is really pissing off lawmakers in the Empire State who feel they should be getting a cut of legal cannabis sales. But of course, with only a very small handful of legal licensed dispensaries allowed to sell pot products, they really have no one but themselves to blame. However, Governor Hochul and New York City Mayor Eric Adams have a new plan to stop this. An actual law in Hochul's state budget would allow cops to just lock them up, meaning they can literally lock up any shop that's caught illegally selling cannabis. And I mean that they could slap a goddamn padlock on the shop and shut that shit down. So according to Mayor Adams, I bet you guys forgot that he was the mayor of New York, but Adams says, quote, "Illegal cannabis shops, this is your warning. You will be locked out if you attempt to continue to sell illegal items." Unfortunately, this might be too little too late. You can't make weed legal and then wait 3 years to serve the customer and expect that no one's going to fill that void. But by CBS's count, New York City has around 2,000 stores illegally selling pot compared to only about 100 legitimate adult use retailers. And the shitty New York adult use rollout also has pot farmers pissed off at the governor, as many licensed growers have nowhere to sell their crops because there are so few retail shops open. A survey of licensed farmers found that they're millions of dollars in debt, and they've had to destroy much of their crops with nowhere to sell it. And some of these farmers feel that Governor Hochul has ignored them after promising to provide funds through the state budget that would subsidize cannabis cultivators while the state's retail situation got sorted out. So, a real mess here in New York, an example of how not to do it for other states.
Absolutely. That's just insane. You know, that's government for you, though. You know, it's like they create a mistake just to fix it, basically. And then they set up a legal system to fail. Yeah, it's awful that they're going to do that. And I have a feeling, with the amount of money that's being made out there, you know, these shops are going to be able to basically purchase the right tools to basically remove these locks and just be open the next day. So I don't know how much it's going to really stop them. You know, I know they were going to go after landlords. They were going to do this. They were going to do that. But right now it's like it would, you know, if they go one by one, it would take years to shut down 2,000 shops. And if they do them all at once, it's going to be this crazy crackdown that's just going to be this heavy-handed BS move on, you know, on the mayor's part. So I don't know, man. It's like, just license everybody and let the free market figure itself out. That's kind of the way I see it. I think they're making it way too complicated, by making it all this whole licensing situation. And I mean, I'm sure obviously that's a way for them to make money, but we need access, you know. They had the social consumption lounges on that law too. I haven't seen one licensed legal one open yet. You know, the micro grows, you know, those licenses haven't even, only a few have even gone out. So I just, you know, it's government dragging their feet and slow bureaucratic nonsense.
Yeah, and when you think about it, you know, why would you go way across town, like take a subway or a bus or something to get to a legal dispensary to pay more for a product that you could probably get across the street from your apartment that's selling it cheaper because they're not including the New York sales tax on cannabis? Obviously, we want the state to benefit from legal sales. I mean, that's part of the allure of having an adult use program, but they've got to make access better, and they've got to do it quickly. So,
Well, luckily we also have home grow, you know, so that's, you know, if we didn't have that, then I'd really be pissed about it. But I have something to fall back on, and I think if you know, people are going to start realizing that as of June, and you know, I think it's going to be, you know, not maybe not a huge segment of the population, but a certain segment is going to just set up a tent, grow their six plants per person or 12 per household. Veg them out nice and never pay for weed again.
There you go. Okay, let's do one more quickly here. Let's go to South Carolina. A bill that would allow the medicinal use of cannabis in South Carolina passed the Senate months ago. However, the House has failed to take up the issue until now, with just weeks left in the legislative session. A House committee heard testimony regarding the medical marijuana bill, which is described by its GOP sponsor as conservative. Should the bill pass, patients could only gain access to medical pot with a doctor's recommendation and strict qualifying conditions, including chronic and terminal illnesses. Nonetheless, Sheriff Dwayne Lewis, who represents the state's Sheriff's Association, testified before the House in opposition to the medical pot bill, calling cannabis a gateway drug and claiming the bill, quote, would only exacerbate existing challenges and jeopardize safety. However, former Sheriff's Association head Jeffrey Moore also testified, but he was in favor of passing the bill, citing his son's personal experience with cannabis and how it helped him overcome PTSD-related alcohol abuse. So now we just need every sheriff and law enforcement member in the country to have a personal positive experience with cannabis, and we're home free. Anyway, the state Senate also passed a similar bill in 2022, which died in the House, and sadly, this bill is also likely to meet its demise in that chamber as well.
Yeah, you know, it's sad. South Carolina could definitely benefit from legal cannabis, and I could benefit from playing golf in South Carolina without fearing
Without
arrest.
fear, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, speaking of which, like if anybody out there wants to golf, let's golf. The weather is finally back.
Absolutely.
Oh, let's fish.
Fish,
Yeah.
golf, yeah. So as everyone knows, it was 420 last weekend, and unlike New York, some states actually have their shit together. Cannabis sales tracking tech companies reported record sales across the country on the high holiday. And something caught our interest, and it was a report for the best pot cities in America for 2024. So we had an opportunity to sit down with the report writer, Jamie Seal, and she joins us now. So let's welcome Jamie Seal to Grow Bud Yourself. All right, well, here we are, and Dan and I were just talking the other day about how much we love it when there's like rankings of things, especially cannabis things. And so we're really excited to have Jamie Seal on the show. And Jamie, you sort of figured out the best and worst weed cities in America for 2024. So obviously, we want to get into your findings, but before we get into those, why don't you let our listeners know a little bit of the background on how you put all this together, who you partnered with, and sort of how you came up with this information, meaning, you know, like what is the criteria for the rankings of the top pot cities in the country?
Yeah, thank you for having me. So we've done this study for, I believe, 3 years now, and we've worked with Leafly on the past two editions. And to come up with the best pot city, we took into account several metrics, trying to get the right balance of quantity and quality and just like the fun cultural aspects of cannabis. So we looked at the number of dispensaries per 100,000 residents, the quality of those dispensaries, like the ratings that users gave the products. We looked at, of course, legality. If a city has legal recreational weed, that's a big bonus. And medical marijuana is also like a bonus, but it's not ranked as highly as if it's fully legal for recreational use. And of course, price was another big factor. For high quality and mid quality weed, we wanted to get that like affordability aspect in there as well. And then some of the, you know, smaller metrics that we looked at were just, you know, fast food restaurants per 100,000 residents for, you know, when the munchies attack, hiking trails, movie theaters, and just kind of some of the fun cultural aspects of cannabis use.
Awesome.
That's
all right.
Awesome. Yeah. I love the hiking trails being part of the, and I see like how it's weighed. So it's like, obviously, legality and dispensaries per residence is higher than hiking trails, but still interesting. And you're kind of coming at this from a, like a real estate perspective, right?
Right. So our thought is like, you know, if, you know, weed is something that you use on a regular basis, it might make sense for you to live in a city where, you know, there's really no, you know, legal consequences for you using it on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I think, I hopefully New York, where we are, will shoot up on this for next year, because we actually have legal home grow coming in June. And also consumption lounges opening, hopefully in the very near future as well. So a lot of new licenses have been given out, and so I was surprised to see us so low on the list. But I do think we'll bounce up in the next year. I think for 2025.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about doing this study every year, is that it's always changing, and so there's lots of new things to consider every year.
Yeah, and said definitely some surprises. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of cities in California are going to rank pretty high, and Denver, of course, Portland, Oregon. But then this, you know, Oklahoma City, you know, and some, you know, what did you find were some of the surprises for you?
Yeah, Oklahoma City is interesting. I am actually from Missouri, really close to Oklahoma. So I drive through it a lot. And just from my personal experience, you see a lot of advertising on the side of the road, lots of dispensaries just driving through on the road. So I was not that surprised to see that it ranked really high, but also like a little bit, because it's not legal for recreational use. But Oklahoma City has more dispensaries per capita than any other city we studied. And that's just because it's very easy to get a license there. It's a very like laissez-faire market. And so it has just exploded there for medical use. They did have a referendum on recreational use last year, but it failed. So we're keeping an eye on Oklahoma City and seeing how that that changes in the next few years. But definitely cool to see like a Midwestern city on the top 15.
Yeah, and 4, 5, and 6 are all kind of surprises for me. Like,
well, why don't we just do a top 10? Yeah. Do you want to just give us the top 10 cities so everyone knows what we're talking about?
Sure. Denver is number one. It's right there in the name, the Mile High City. It was one of the first cities, or I guess states, to legalize recreational weed. So it has a very mature industry. So no surprise there that it's number one. Portland is number two. Last year, it was our number one city, but fell to number two this year. Three is Las Vegas. Four is Buffalo. Five is Baltimore. Six is Phoenix. Seven is Seattle. Eight is Sacramento. Nine is Kansas City. 10 is Providence. 11 is Boston. 12 is San Jose. 13 is Hartford. 14 is San Francisco. And 15 is Oklahoma City.
Oh yeah, like Dan said, some surprises in there.
Yeah, I was also surprised to see Kansas City ranked so high, because it just legalized recreational weed, I believe, last year, yeah, in 2023. But it's already performing really well. It has a lot of dispensaries, three per 100,000 residents, which is more than LA, which has had legal weed available for a long time, I believe since 2016. So yeah, it's good to see some of these like Midwestern cities in there, because we usually tend to think of like the best weed cities as those being on the coasts.
Interesting. And as a Bostonian, very happy to see that them ranked in the top 15 as well, having grown up there and kind of gotten interested in cannabis in that region. And then New York, kind of lower on the list, and Buffalo being above New York is definitely a surprise. What are your thoughts on Buffalo?
Yeah, Buffalo, I feel like, is kind of our dark horse. No one expected it to do so high, but it did. Buffalo has a few things, a few things over New York City, and one of the things is just, as you might expect, cost. It's a little bit cheaper in Buffalo. To buy weed, I think it's like $318 an ounce instead of 380, so a little bit of a discount there. It's also got higher quality dispensaries according to Leafly users. So Buffalo dispensaries have about 4.2 stars compared to like 3.5 in New York. So the price and the quality of the product really put Buffalo ahead of New York.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And okay, so when we have the best cities, and there's a lot of them, you could check them out yourself if you go over to the realestatewitch.com, and then best weed cities. So we talked about some of the best. What were some of the worst, and why were they ranked as the worst?
Right. Our worst weed cities are, but basically the ones that you'd expect. I don't think there are a lot of surprises in here. Louisville was the number one worst weed city, so not a great distinction. Interestingly enough, there is a medical marijuana bill trying to go through like the state legislature, appropriately named like Bill 420. But the chances of that going into effect are pretty low.
Yeah, that's definitely a shame because Kentucky, traditionally has been known for the bluegrass and the agricultural kind of background.
Right. And I do have to correct myself on that. So medical marijuana is going into effect in Kentucky in 2025, so next year, which might lift it out of the bottom spot. But the bill going through right now is for recreational weed. So did just want to clarify that.
Yeah, so it's Louisville at the first spot, and then Dallas, Texas, Atlanta, Houston, Birmingham, Alabama, Nashville, Tennessee, Charlotte, Milwaukee, Memphis, and Indianapolis.
Yeah, a lot of our top or bottom 10 cities don't have any form of recreational marijuana. and like in Texas, where I live now, there's not even like a medical program. Only CBD products are allowed. So obviously, when these things aren't legal, you're going to not have a lot of infrastructure. You're not going to have a lot of dispensaries. So it's, there's just, it's hard to rank those cities because there's nothing there, which just, it automatically like kind of shoots them to the bottom.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because, like you said, you've been doing this now for 3 years, and you've seen the ups and downs. And I love that, you've also got all the rankings kind of divided by category as well, so people can see cities with the most dispensaries, cities with fewest dispensaries, the highest rated and lowest rated, and even most and least passionate. Like, how is that? Is that for just from Leafly comments and engagement?
Yeah, that's a fun one. We actually use Google Trends for that one. We're looking at search traffic and some keywords that people might search, like marijuana, cannabis, dispensaries near me, different types of strains of cannabis. And so I believe we found that the most passionate weed city is Phoenix, and Phoenix also has the most Leafly site visits. So they're looking on the web for information and products a lot more than residents in other cities.
And you've even got breakdowns of strains that are popular in different cities as well.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, what strains are popular in different cities. And so it's kind of interesting to see, do they prefer like their local strains or do they kind of want to branch out? So it adds some interesting insights.
And also with this study, you conducted a survey to get some pop perspectives of Americans. So what were some of the what did that reveal to you? Anything surprising there?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that I took away from that poll was just kind of like Americans' vice of choice. Alcohol is still kind of the go-to vice or drug, if you will, except on the West Coast, where people would prefer cannabis at the same rate as alcohol, which makes sense considering that those Western cities were some of the first to legalize recreational weed. So it's kind of a little bit more accepted there. So that was interesting. Also, like just I feel like this has been well reported on before, but just, a majority of Americans support cannabis legalization in some form or another, 55%. Also interesting was that the highest support was in the Midwest, where a lot of these states still have bans against cannabis. So I think people there are kind of maybe feeling a little bit left out and want it to be legalized there. And then just a lot of people have actually, tried marijuana at some point or another. I believe it's like almost two-thirds. So it's definitely becoming more mainstream throughout the US.
Yeah, definitely more mainstream for sure. And there's so much other interesting stuff here. I love that there's like this coming from this real estate perspective, because there's even another article here about states with legal cannabis seeing a boosts in home appreciation. And is that something you've been able to actually quantify?
Yeah, we have that's a separate study that we do every other year. And yeah, the past two times we've done the study, we have seen that states with legal cannabis have higher home values. Some of that does happen to be like, California has legal weed. It also has very high home values. And so I wouldn't say that that legal weed is a cause of the high home values, but there is a correlation that we've found. We also have just like a general a general study on Americans' cannabis opinions, and we found that, you know, there's really nothing holding Americans back from like living next to a dispensary or living within close proximity to one, even though there's kind of this stigma that Americans don't want to live near a dispensary. But we found that that's really not true. Like 60 or 70% would have no problem living next to a dispensary. But they would not want to live like in a house that smells of like cigarette smoke, interestingly enough. So it's lots of different like little tidbits in there.
Yeah, that is very cool. And it's a really interesting report. I really dig that you kind of break it down in the top, you know, 50 for the best weed cities in America. It includes, you know, what you could expect to pay for an ounce of high quality cannabis. And it also has that legal status. And obviously, as you might have guessed, almost all of the top rated cities are fully legal, with the exception in the top 20 of Oklahoma City, as we mentioned. Some other non-recreational cities include Philadelphia, Orlando, Tampa, and Jacksonville. So those are all, you know, top 30 or so rated cities in the country for cannabis, and they don't have recreational pot.
Right. And I believe in Florida, there's like a petition to get recreational weed on the ballot. And there's other, you know, other cities and states trying to get things on the ballot for this November. So it will definitely be interesting to see how this changes in the coming years. And just, you know, cities all the time are improving their you know, infrastructure for marijuana, adjusting their laws, because it's changing all the time. Like Minneapolis is a state where, or a city where weed is fully legal, but it ranks below Orlando and Philadelphia, where it's only available for medicinal use. And the result of that is just because it is so new in Minneapolis. Again, I think it was one of those cities and states that legalized it just fairly recently. So as they continue to like grow, you know, the Minneapolis will improve, but it's just a matter of like getting that infrastructure up and running.
Well, I want to thank you, Jamie Seal. Tell us a little bit about Real Estate Witch and Clever Real Estate, and what you guys do over there.
Yeah, so we are an agent matching service. If someone wants to buy or sell a home, they can contact us and we will get them matched with a realtor who works for about 1.5% instead of a 3% commission fee. So happy to do that for customers. But in the meantime, we also have some really great studies on all sorts of topics, not just weed. we have a bunch of real estate studies about, you know, home prices versus inflation, and personal finance studies on Americans' reckless spending habits and segments of home buyers and sellers. So lots of informative resources for anyone who's looking to buy or sell a home right now.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we'll share the link to the article on our socials and stuff, but how can people find out more about the study and actually read it for themselves, find their city and either, you know, watch it rise or go down over the next few years or whatever?
Yeah, we have it up online at realestatewitch.com/bestweedcities. It's also on our social media channels. We're on X/Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and letting us know about the best weed cities in America.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Jamie Steele. And we'll be right back with more Grow Bud Yourself after this. Oh, that was awesome having Jamie on. I feel like I learned a lot, but the show is not nearly over, and we have an extremely exciting interview coming up.
Yes. Yeah, this is one I've wanted to get for a long, long time. Having gone over to Amsterdam all my life, basically from my early 20s in the mid-90s to now, you know, having gone to Gray Area Coffee Shop, even way back when, where they've been around more than 25 years. And we are lucky enough to have John Foster of Gray Area Coffee Shop in Amsterdam as a guest on the show. I'm very excited. So why don't we take a quick little break and come back with John from Gray Area. Welcome to the Spring Spectacular at SeedsHereNow.com, where April showers bring not just flowers, but a festival of flavors and genetics that'll transform your garden into a masterpiece. This month, we're doubling down on delights with cookies as our flavor of the month and compound genetics as breeder of the month, each at 20% off. So dive deep during National Gardening Week with a buy two, get one free offer on elite packs. The pinnacle of our celebration is the 420 extravaganza with unbeatable deals on the dankest strains. And don't forget Earth Day, where going green earns you 10% off on all orders. April is the time to grow with us, join our community, and elevate your garden to legendary status. Check out seedsherenow.com, where excellence in genetics meets the joy of cultivation. And Grow Bud Yourself listeners can use the promo code DANKOSHIP for free shipping on all domestic orders. SeedsHereNow.com.
All right, welcome back. And we have a very special treat for you guys this week. Our guest is Mr. John Foster of the Gray Area Coffee Shop in Amsterdam, Netherlands. Welcome, John.
Great to be on the show, Danny. Great to see you this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And very rare, too, to see you here stateside. So definitely a pleasure. You know, we both have a lot more gray hair these days, but we've known each other over 25 years now. And why don't you take me back to the beginning? Take me back to basically before you arrived over in Amsterdam and sort of how you got involved in the gray area, how you made your way over to Holland.
Well, I guess in the beginning there was music. And so that was my main interest when I was growing up. And then as music does, then weed got involved and cannabis got interesting too. So those were always the two distinct tracks in my life, and of course they merged pretty easily. So we were growing up and enjoying all those things and looking for something in the future. Of course we'd get like the traded high times back in high school, and you had like one issue circulating around. It's like even if somebody got you saw you with that, it was like you were under arrest, it seemed like, or you might be. So that was those times. And then We continued, and I was got into a band, a couple of bands, and then in college I was still in a band. And actually, the singer from the band had the idea to get a shop in Amsterdam as he was reading High Times again, and was always seeing about what was going on in Amsterdam. So that was in like 92-93 period, and eventually in 1994. Well, actually in 1993, then our manager, Victor, he had come over to Amsterdam and he was learning about weed and doing different things. And they had discovered some of the bubblegum weed in Providence, Rhode Island from a bag that he bought. And so he started to collect those seeds and spent some time after he arrived in Amsterdam with Adam from Hempworks at the time, TH Seeds. And he was also from the East Coast, and so he showed Victor around, and over time they found the location for a coffee shop. And at that point I was able to come over with my companions and start the show further running.
Amazing. And yeah, I mean, in those days I remember, you know, the mid late 90s, Gray Area was really an oasis. It was It's a small shop, of course, but very much very welcoming to Americans and musicians from all over. And a place where you could buy an eighth instead of a gram, and a place where they had you guys had great quality flour and hash and even dry sift, which was very rare to find in Amsterdam. Tell me a little bit about the philosophy behind Gray Area Coffee Shop.
Well, I guess it's always from the smoker's base. So, for example, when we were first working there in the early years, then there was a Dutch gentleman who was also growing weed at the time, and he nicknamed us the worship area because he felt we were like worshiping the weed. For him, it was just like a product he was trying to grow and sell. But then for us, it was, always a big deal to check out the different strains and the smells, the aromas, and the effects, of course, from everything. And so really just from a weed lover's point of view, and also a view of the freedom, because that was the main reason that we were there at the time. Because in the States in the mid-90s, it was a lot more prohibitive, and to see what was going on in Amsterdam and to be able to freely explore the different varieties. And there was a lot of course cross discussion at that time between American growers and the Dutch growers, between the hydroponic systems at the time and the techniques that were developed in both areas. So it proved to be a real fruitful environment to be in, and of course also a really fun environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And the menu has obviously changed over the years, but certain things just seem to sort of always remain on that gray area menu. And you mentioned sort of how the laws were back then. I mean, I we spoke about this in person earlier, but for us, this was like Mecca, to go to a place and be treated like a customer instead of a criminal, and be treated like a connoisseur and an aficionado, and be able to order off a menu was so unique. And the idea was basically to bring that back home and spread it around. And I think a lot of people had that same belief or that same inclination to basically, like, yes, it's great to come here to and experience this, but why can't it be this way back home, wherever home might be? And so what's it like to see consumption lounges now, like Astor Club and those guys, Matt and Ben? I know Ben was a gray area regular in the 90s and 2000s. What's it like to see sort of the expansion of all of that and the spread worldwide of that same culture?
It's amazing, right? It's really I mean that sure, it's a changing marketplace and everything, and you see the extreme sort of commercialization of certain products and certain sectors of the market, and yet just to have the product in so many countries and being so accepted now, it's really amazing, especially in America too, with all the different states who have legalized now, and then hopefully with the declassification from the DEA side of things, that we can really that don't think there's any turning back for America now with the weed. I certainly hope. And I remember when it was in the 90s, when you had in 90, I guess it was 96, with the proposition in California for the medical weed, and that was really a strong start. And we had, of course, at that time, people like Todd McCormick visiting Amsterdam and doing their thing with the medical fight, and took a lot of bravery back in those days to get that going. And we had some early caregivers coming and talking about their experiences, and people who were growing for the good of medicine and would get busted and would continue to work. And so those things were really monumental. And later with the recreational bill in California, that's for me when it really exploded worldwide. You had attention from all different angles about that particular happening, and people visiting Amsterdam again as a Mecca to learn things and bring it back, like you said, to their home country, and then get things started there with their own people. And so then it seemed to be at that point we'd really expanded in acceptance around the world. And once one place accepted it, then The other felt comfortable in accepting it, and so it rolled on, and people came out from behind the curtain, you know, that they'd been smoking for years, and the different people who never would be, dare to admit it suddenly became enabled to do so. So I think that was really great in the ability to spread things around.
Absolutely. What are some of your favorites on the menu from over the years, or even more recently that you guys have available for people to purchase at Gray Area?
Well, recently we had a lot of products from our friends, the Growers with Attitude, and for example, when the hip hop band The Far Side, good friends of ours, Imani from The Far Side, they love to smoke the organic weeds also. So then we often give them some of the strains from GWA, and they've got like a forbidden fruit that's really good, the Kush Mints, and then they've got the Gastropop, which is a newer strain, which is a bit sativa oriented, and of course, we always have the old favorites like we were talking about before, like the Kosher Kush, one of the old school OG phenotypes that's been running around Amsterdam for a while. And we had our Evergrey, which is a sour diesel cross, which was really, and for me, was really great because it was from the East Coast sour diesel genetics. And we're working more with some of the sour strains now to bring those back. And then you have, of course, the hazes, which I found out was to a big surprise, was quite popular in New York at the moment. A lot of people looking for different sativas. So in fact, I judged the sativa category in the Billies, and it was really interesting because, of course, I know a lot of the hybrid strains and the newer strains, but in Amsterdam we have a history of a lot of sativas, and so to explore some of these was really interesting. And I was talking with a friend last night, and we were talking about some of the original hazes from Florida and from Cuba and from the Latin American community. And that was really interesting to me. Whereas in Amsterdam, you have a lot of hazes coming from other tropical environments from their world travels, like the Africans or the Thai or haze, the different hazes. So it was fascinating to go into the North American haze.
Absolutely. And so here in the, you know, and outside of Amsterdam, we hear a lot about you know, potential crackdowns on the coffee shop scene and all of that. What is the status right now? I mean, what's the legality as far as you guys being able to have tourists come to the shop and remain open at all? You know, tell me a little bit about the legal situation.
Well, they had a lot of an excess amount of coffee shops in their opinion in the past, and so they did a lot of different crackdown periods. They had rezoning in the city, which closed a bunch of shops. They had issues with the school zones, shops being too close to schools, and then also any violations, of course, they'll try and remove coffee shops. At the moment, it's they've sort of toned down in Amsterdam to the number of shops that they want, it seems. So it seems like there's less threats overall. And then secondly, they're trying to organize a national experiment in legal growing. And I say trying to organize, well, it is organized and it is active, and it's like a 5-year plan. Of course, there's been delays already, but they have like 10 different cities across the Netherlands who are going to participate in a legal grow, where there'll be a grow room that will supply all the coffee shops in that district. And at the moment, they've changed it a bit so that actually coffee shops from different cities, as long as they're participating in the legal program, can still buy from other legal distributors. And Amsterdam was going to be included in that, but not the full city because it's too large. But they decided to choose one city section and try that. So they chose the East section, where they have a limited number of coffee shops and a certain amount of residents. But as the politics changed in the past election, unfortunately, Amsterdam was voted out of the experiment altogether. And so now we're relying on the other cities to go through with the experiment, and it's slowly starting. We had about 2 or 3 months ago the first legal weed from Breda. We asked a friend who was out there to bring some over, so he did bring it, and there was two different legal growers represented, each with a different colored package. Has to be a generic style package with some labeling. With this, we'll get more of the testing because now we're selling, cannabis that is through the back door. So we have to rely on our contacts to maintain the quality, whereas we don't have the laboratory testing, and that will be something new with the legal grows.
Interesting. Now, are there any plans for any sort of expansion, whether it be in Amsterdam or elsewhere, other cities or countries or areas or gray area?
Well, we're not 100% certain of plans at the moment, but of course, with everything that's going on, we're interested in looking around in different areas and seeing what's happening in Barcelona, for example, working with the Growers with Attitude, and in New York, being hosted by the Astor Club, and being that Ben was a customer before, that I've known each other for quite a long time. Also, even though there was a gap, it's really great, and it's inspirational to create and think about new possibilities for both sides, I guess.
Yeah, I mean it's so interesting because even here in New York, I mean we have consumption lounges, but they're again operating in a gray area. So, but now there are licenses that are going to be given out for those type of establishments. Do you have any sort of advice for people who are going to be opening? I mean, as you mentioned, Astor Club clearly, an homage to gray area in some ways, of course. But do you have any advice for people that are going to be opening consumption lounges licensed here in the States?
I don't really have specific advice except that to follow the main advice of going with your heart and what you know is what's good and the way to operate, and also that just to go back to about the coffee shops, and we talked about the threats against them, and one of the things was about locals only being able to buy in the coffee shops. And that's something that's not going to be activated in Amsterdam, although there's been talk about it in some of the southern cities, that is the case. But that's my main thing about having a consumption lounge, is the diversity of all the different people that come into that lounge and are able to enjoy that space, and utilize cannabis, is not only from the coffee shop model, which is something to be of like an extended living room for people who are living at home. They can't smoke their weed at home, so okay, go to the coffee shop. It's a place where you can smoke and socialize with other people. And in my time at Gray Area, it's always been amazing the diversity of people, and that's what I find also with the Astor Club and being here in New York. It's the diversity of all the different people and backgrounds, ages mixing together, that really makes the best atmosphere in a consumption lounge. So that's my main advice, is keep open to everybody, and that as a unified group, it's an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, you've given me a lot of flowers over the years. Obviously I traveled over there a lot, even before High Times. We talked about the head case days, bringing baseball hats over and hanging out with you guys. So you've given me flowers. I want to give you some flowers basically and say, thank you for keeping the dream alive. Thank you for being, the one place where we could go and really feel comfort and welcomeness and a home away from home for all those years, and an inspiration for us to spread that same vibe and culture and community and all of it throughout the world, because like I said, it was an oasis in a whole world of prohibition. Gray Area was, and Amsterdam in general were the place that you could go. Amsterdam in general, but Gray Area, especially if you were a connoisseur and an aficionado and someone who really loves the plant and really, wants quality at a good price with a good vibe from good people. So thank you so much for that. That's, almost 30 years now or 30, close to 30 years of service to this wonderful healing flower.
I love that. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a great experience, and great to be able to meet people like you in Amsterdam, and have all the experiences over the years. It's been a real blessing.
Yeah, I mean, all the awards that you've won and everything, but of course, just it must be amazing to meet all the different people from all over the world who travel there. Can you let people know how they can find out more and keep up with what's going on with Gray Area, Instagram handles and such?
Yeah, we've got the Instagram Gray Area 420, and we have a basic website. We obviously can't advertise. The coffee shops have specific rules against advertising, so the best place is on Gray Area 420 on Instagram there.
Nice. Now answer me one last thing. What's the correct spelling of gray? You guys have Grey. Sometimes I see Gray.
It seems that one of, it seems that well the pro the proper spelling is Grey, and that it seems that from what I understand is that one is the English way of spelling it and one is the American way, and I would take a guess right now, but I'm really not sure which one is which at
All right.
the
Well, hey,
moment.
I want to thank you so much. I know you don't do a lot of podcasts and things like this, so I really appreciate you coming on the show. I appreciate our many years of long distance friendship for the most part, but still definitely thank you for coming on the show, and yeah, really truly thank you.
It's my pleasure to be on, Danny. And I got one last comment about the old hemp hats too. That's directly connected with all this musical impetus at our shop. Because of course, many times you'd bring in the cannabis right in that stash pouch in the head case hat, walk right in through security in those days, and then that's the weed that the artist would be enjoying. So, thank you very much too for hand delivering those at the time, and for your continued work. I checked out your book. I was reading it again this morning. I'm almost finished, and I'm ready to plant some seeds.
Oh, wow. Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, John Foster, Gray Area Coffee Shop in Amsterdam. Do not visit Amsterdam without stopping there. Should be your first stop and your last stop, and
Thanks so
everything
much.
in between. Thank you. Thanks, John. And we'll be back after these messages with more Grow Bud Yourself.
As their motto goes, keep it fresh. Nature's Heritage takes pride in bringing the freshest, most potent, aromatic, and tasty flower to the Massachusetts and Maryland markets. Understanding that plants are the boss, the cultivation team gives them everything they need to reach their highest potential, including using Canna Coco and nutrients, some of the best in the industry. With very little automation in their process, Nature's Heritage is grown by humans who care for their plants from cultivation to harvest and drying and curing, all the way down to hand trimming their buds. The results capture the finest aspects of the many unique strains Nature's Heritage cultivates. And I should mention, I have literally tried their flower. They really put an emphasis on the quality of their products, the genetics, and the way that it's grown. It's all done by hand. No automation and all very well dried and cured properly, which is so important. So when people tell me, dispensary weed can't hold a candle to this, that, and the other, I tell them, go check out Nature's Heritage. You can go on the website naturesheritagecannabis.com to find a store near you. If you're in Massachusetts or Maryland, you could take a look at their different products. All the different strains that they have, it's pretty amazing. So I can personally vouch for the quality of Nature's Heritage products. Visit naturesheritagecannabis.com, and as always, hashtag keep it fresh. All right, welcome back, and thank you to John Foster, Gray Area Coffee Shop. Mike, do you have memories of Gray Area?
Oh my God. It was not only the first coffee shop I went to in Amsterdam, it's still one of my favorites. I mean, it's not a super frilly coffee shop compared to some of the other ones, but it's great. I love it. Love that shop.
Yeah, it definitely feels like home. And some of those shops, they can, if you go to like a locals only shop, you can definitely feel feel very touristy and unwelcome. at a few spots, you know, not a lot, but some of them are local, you know. And this was like our local, one of them. But yeah, so thanks to John, and yeah, it was just nice to reminisce. I have very fond memories of our trips to Amsterdam and going to Gray Area, and them, they've been fighting the good fight for a long, long time, so it's pretty rad.
We were
But
actually
we are
there
now.
together at one point. I think we were doing like a tour of dispensaries and trying to do an audio project. We went to Gray Area and yeah, that was one of the ones we visited. But yes, anyway, it is
Absolutely.
cultivation time, and as you all know, Danny brings you a tip that's going to help you become a better grower. So what do you want to discuss this week?
Yeah, so basically I want to help people prepare for the outdoor growing season, which is basically just kicking in at this point. And you know, it definitely helps to be prepared and not have certain dates or times sneak up on you and have to scramble around for things. So the first thing I would say is you want to have your genetics ready, whatever it might be, growing from seed or from clone. I know I've definitely recommended growing from seed for outdoor growers, but you can grow outdoors from clone. It's not like, you know, it's just you don't get the taproot is you know, the basic difference. Clones just aren't going to perform as strong as seed plants, plants grown from seed with a main taproot, but clones will do great, and you'll flower and you'll get plenty of bud off them. So whether you're growing from seeds or clones, you want to basically be at a stage right now. If you haven't started yet, you should definitely start now. But at this point, you know, mid to late April, you basically want to be ready to put them outside. I would say, you know, people usually say about Mother's Day. I don't like to do it in mid-April. I think that, you know, this is where people have that issue where their plants start to flower early, and then they have to re-veg basically at the end of May, going into June, because that's really when you have the most outdoor light, is basically the you know, the summer equinox, the solstice basically, and so that's end of June. But obviously daylight is increasing from, you know, now till then. So that's one reason why, you know, some people will tell you just wait till after the first frost, or the last frost, I should say. Wait till after the last frost and you can put your plants out. But I do think in some places, particularly here where we are, like there's really no, not much more danger of frost in April, or at least towards the end of April. But if you put the plants out now, they're going to potentially start flowering, which I just hate that process of re-vegging. I think it really slows things down. It confuses the plant. And why not put it out when, you know, the vegging time is the longest? So you start them indoors, and you get them real strong and acclimated bit by bit to the outdoors. So, you know, you have your lights inside and you've got your plants under at least 18 hours of light. There's nothing wrong with during the day bringing them outside, you know, for a few hours or more, and basically acclimating them to sunshine while they're still vegging inside. It's really actually a good idea to take advantage of the free sun that's out there during the day, but you certainly want to remember the plants and bring them back in. You don't want to leave them out in full sun when they're used to just indoor lighting. But hey, if there's an overcast day and you want to get them out there for an hour or two or more. And then if there's a few sunny days, put them out for a little while and keep an eye on them, make sure they don't wilt and struggle with the amount of light. But you know, you can definitely do that, and you should do that because the plants will get stronger, and by the time you get them out, they'll be acclimated to full sun, because it does take a little bit of adjustment for sure. Now, you also want to decide whether you're growing in the ground or in pots, and how that's going to impact your watering schedules and things like that. So be prepared. If you're growing in pots, you're going to be watering more often. One good thing is get white pots instead of black pots, because they won't absorb as much heat. You won't get you know, burn. Actually, I have black pots, but I use white grow bags around the pots just to keep the pots cooler. And you know, just basically get prepared. Have your pots ready, have your soil ready. Have your plants ready, of course, and really just get them acclimated. That's an important thing. If you just throw them outside, you're going to have issues. And preparing the soil also can be very helpful if you're growing out in the ground. Whatever cover crops you've used, you want to basically grind those in. Whatever composting or anything like that that you've done. I'm not a big proponent of any kind of tilling, but just a nice light kind of loosening up of the crusty soil after the winter isn't a bad idea to do. And just be ready to provide nutrients, water, all of those things. Get ready to also do any kind of pruning and pinching and things that you're going to start doing soon, if you don't want big, huge, tall plants. And yeah, basically, that's a lot of basically getting ready for outdoors. Make sure you have a nice location with good amount of full sun, as much as possible. And then keep those plants watered and happy, and you will be very happy, because this the way I think of outdoor, especially beginner outdoor, and obviously not like outdoor at scale, but just putting out your six plants or your 12 plants on a balcony or a roof deck or whatever it might be. I think of anything that you get from that as basically like free weed. You're really not putting too much electrical costs or even too much effort into it. You're basically letting nature take its course, and anything you get out of that is great. And I love sun-grown weed, so and I feed super light, so I just get a nice clean burn and a really uplifting, amazing high from homegrown outdoor weed, even here in Brooklyn. So that's my tip.
All right, excellent tip. Yes, it's time to get ready for outdoor, and that's coming soon to New York, which we have discussed several times on this podcast. But excellent grow tip. And now it is time to answer some questions from our listeners. And if you have a question you would like answered, get in touch with us. That email is info@growbudyourself.com. And as always, you could get us on the socials, on Patreon, on YouTube. So reach out if you have a question. Dan will answer it. Let's start off with an email question from Carter. And Carter writes, "Hello, good sirs. Thanks for what you do. So I have a question and a response from a question posed in an earlier episode. First, let's say hypothetically you had more ganja than you wanted in your house and you wanted to store it like buried treasure and still come back to something nice. How would you hypothetically go about doing something like that? Would a vacuum sealer be involved? Thanks for any knowledge you could share." And then his second part is, in an earlier episode, a guy named Chuck wrote in and he asked about drying machines, and it sounded like you guys didn't have a suggestion for that. Look, I am a customer only. I get nothing to say that the Herbs Now dryer has been a great option for me. I live in a hot, humid climate, and 60% humidity and 60-degree temps for weeks is very energy and space intensive. I really like the product, even though it looks like a food dehydrator. It leaves no hay smell. I'm just saying so to string you and your listeners some pearls. Wear them if you want. And then he wrote that it's greater than 200 with, the little greater sign, but I think he meant to say less than, because I Googled it and it looks like this Herbs Now dryer goes for about $190. So I should point out that we too get nothing for mentioning this product. But
Absolutely.
so that's what Chuck said. What would you say in response?
Okay, actually, the Chuck was the guy, the second guy.
Oh, yes, sorry. That's what
Right.
Carter said. You're right.
Yeah.
Carter said that.
So, as far as the buried treasure thing, I would say, either get yourself some of those jars that are vacuum sealed jars, the container itself, like, the vacuum company that does the same, vacuum sealers with the bags. They also have jars that with a tube that you can vacuum seal. I would say those are great, and I would probably vacuum seal the jar, and then I'd pro inside the jar, and then I'd probably vacuum seal the outside of the jar with one of the vacuum bags if I was really going for a deep, buried treasure kind of situation. I would put I would make sh first off, make sure that the flour is at the preferred cureness, right where you want it to be, not too moist, because if you put it in there too moist, it will mold eventually, or just won't come out properly. So make sure it's properly cured. Seal it in the jar with a vacuum sealer, and then vacuum seal with a bag the jar. And then I would put that in a cool, dark place, nowhere where the temperature is going to fluctuate, nowhere where light is going to get to the jar. Hopefully the jar is opaque and doesn't allow light into it. And in that way, you can go back a year, and even more later and actually have a great product to consume. I just wouldn't go super duper long because, like I said, eventually it's going to break down. It's a flower, it's going to dry out eventually. But you will slow that process way, 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 way down by vacuum sealing. Now, as far as the drying machine, I have looked at the Herbs Now dryer. It does look like basically like a food dehydrator. I think what's more, positive about this, it also comes with a carbon filter tray. So you can actually control the smell, the odor of the drying as well, which I think is very helpful for home growers in apartment living type situations where they don't necessarily have the room to really dry, hang dry buds and have that smell lingering for 2 weeks or however it might be. And I noticed they also have vacuum steel storage containers. So, that might be also a good option. But it looks like one of the ones there where you like push down the vacuum. I like the ones where you actually use a machine to suck the air out of the jar with the tube. I guess the food saver is the one that is my daily driver or whatever you want to call it. The food saver, I use it for cannabis. I use it for soup. I use it for chicken broth. I use it for all the leftovers, pretty much everything. So, and I've got the bags and the jars. So to me, that's like pretty much the best way to go. As far as that, so thanks for writing in, thanks for listening, and I hope that helps. One thing I will say is, this is great for people who want a different option, but I would still highly recommend hang drying flowers for a long period of time, a week or a minimum of a week, before then putting the flowers into jars for curing. I do think that's the best way to go. But if you can't do that for different variety of reasons, then grab yourself one of these dryers. They're like you said, under $200, and will keep the odor down and get your flowers dry quicker than just hanging them and leaving them out.
All right, very good. Nice little free ad for the Herbs Now dryer. Let's hop over to Patreon. And Raymond writes, "Hey guys, sorry I missed the grow class last month. I wasn't feeling well. Hopefully I'll catch the next one. The question is, are black lights okay to use in the flowering stage, or does it need to be in complete darkness? What would you say to Raymond?"
That's a good question. I don't know about black lights. I would use a green light personally. I do know that green light works because the plant being green isn't able to take in green light. So I definitely have seen people who have used green tinted lighting, whether it be with a flashlight or a bulb that's green, in order to go in there. I mean, ideally, you just leave the plants alone during the dark cycle. It's 12 hours, you just leave them alone. If you absolutely have to go in there, use a green light to go in there. I wouldn't trust a black light. And if you can avoid going in there at all for 12 hours, do that. If you can't and you need to get in there during the dark cycle, green light is the way to go.
All right, very good. We got time for one more here, so let's stick with Patreon and go to Chuck. This actually, I think, is the Chuck that was referred to in Carter's email. But this time, Chuck writes, "Hey, Danny, I have a weekend in New York City coming up. Could you recommend a hydro grow shop for me to check out? Also loved the show about hash making. I turned a bunch of trim into 8 grams of trippy goodness. So yeah, any recommendations for Chuck?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my favorite hydro shop in New York is New York Hydro, also known as Always Blooming. That's our friend Andrew in Brooklyn on Union Street. He's got a great shop. He specializes in living soil. He's got all the build-a-soil stuff there. He's got an amazing assortment. He's got his own worm farms going with worm juice. You know, he's really, and he's a very interesting guy. You know, we were working together. We're doing an event there in June. June 1st, which is to celebrate legal home grow in New York. I mentioned that earlier in the show, but that shop I would definitely recommend a visit to. He's got some plants growing outside, all kinds of, you know, beautiful foliage, and he's and a great food truck. If you like burgers, his burgers are famous. All you have to do is check out the ticket link for the event that we have on June 1st, and there's links to his illustrious food career as a burger smith. He also did time, federal time, for international drugs trafficking, but we could talk about that with him on a future episode. He's got a very interesting story and he's a great dude. So check out Andrew at New York Hydro. Tell him I sent you. I have another shop recommendation, which is my old school go-to shop, which is called Indoor Outdoor Gardener. And it's out in Bay Ridge on 5th Avenue and 83rd Street, also Brooklyn. Real amazing Brooklyn neighborhood. If you want to see like an authentic, you know, South Brooklyn neighborhood with great food and great views of the Verrazano Bridge and really actually a wonderful place to check out. Go out there to Bay Ridge. That's the shop. The gentleman who started the shop, Peter, who has since passed away. He was a great dude, an amazing man, had that shop there for many, many years. Now his wife runs the shop and it's just a really great place to pick up, you know, different plants. They've got amazing succulent selection and just a bunch of grow equipment as well. And really it's a family operation. And even though Peter has passed, his memory lives on in the store. His wife, you know, just continues to serve the neighborhood all kinds of flowers and fruits and vegetables and basically, you know, all the materials to beautify your garden are there, and it's just a wonderful place. So Indoor Outdoor Gardener, 5th Avenue and 83rd Street in Brooklyn, in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and New York Hydro / Always Blooming on Union Street in Gowanus, Park Slope area of Brooklyn. Those are my two recommendations for New York City hydro stores. There are other stores. There's stores in Astoria is the Grow Room, and there's even stores in the Bronx and Manhattan. So get out there, check them out. I think there's one even in Staten Island as well.
All right, very good. Thank you, Chuck. Thanks to everybody who wrote in this week. If you have a question you would like answered, get in touch with us. The email is info@growbudyourself.com. What do you say we take a short recess, come back, and wrap it up?
With a bow, let's do it. If you're a grower or you're thinking about starting your first crop, then you need to know about Sweetleaf plant nutrients. Sweetleaf has an incredible line of organic fertilizers and, of course, their legacy line that includes organic and some synthetic fertilizers. So check them out at sweetleaf.com. That's SUITELEAF.com. The code DANKO15 gets you 15% off everything at Sweetleaf. That's 15% off the signature line of nutrients, as well as essentials like complete indoor hydroponic grow tent kits, grow lights, plus awesome apparel, backpacks, and much more. If you join our Patreon, you actually get access to additional codes worth 20% and even 25% off. And all paid Patreon supporters receive free Sweetleaf nutrients just for signing up. Sweetleaf provides all the tools necessary for the modern gardener. Check them out at sweetleaf.com and remember the code DANKO15 for 15% off. Hey guys, I want to tell you about one of our favorite sponsors that has been with us since the beginning, Excelsior Extracts. Made up of Outcast and TOH from Excelsior, they've been incredible people, incredible growers, and made an incredible product. Unfortunately, a year ago or so, we lost Outcast, our friend Elaine, just a tremendous loss to our community, someone who really helped with a lot, and including the THC-infused pain rub. That was made by patients for patients, providing incredibly powerful relief from pain. The product was developed to treat Outcast's chronic pain. So you can trust me that this is a super potent topical, really works. A lot of topicals just don't have that the amount of THC to provide the relief, or they have a very perfunctory amount of CBD. And this is a salve that works, a real pain rub. You can find out more about Excelsior on Instagram at Excelsior Extracts. You can DM them to learn more about the amazing pain rub. Don't forget to tell TOH that Grow Bud Yourself sent you. And we really appreciate all the support over all the years. All right. Welcome back. Thank you for listening, you guys. Thank you to John Foster from Gray Area Coffee Shop. Definitely a bucket list interview for me. So thanks, John. Check out Gray Area Coffee Shop anytime you go to Amsterdam. Check out their socials at Gray Area 420 on Instagram. Thank you to our sponsors. I'm going to mention Vapor.com first because they don't get as much love during the show, but they are an affiliate with the code GROWBUDYOURSELF20 for 20% off everything site-wide. Do yourself a favor, just go on vapor.com and look at the wide variety of stuff. I'm sure there is stuff there that you need to buy. Every vaporizer in the world, every rolling paper in the world, anything that's an accessory for cannabis use is there, and you can get 20% off. So if you've been holding off on buying one of those Puffco proxies or a Peak Pro or whatever it is, you now have your 20% off deal, and you will only find 15 out there in the world. So use code GROWBUDYOURSELF20 for 20% off anything at vapor.com. That helps us out as well. So even if you're just planning a purchase and you're thinking about it, go to that site, use our code, and get your 20% discount. It helps us, it helps you, and you know, keeps us running. Thank you to the Patreon supporters and the YouTube subscribers. We're almost to the point where we can monetize YouTube, which is probably the point at which they'll probably kick us off YouTube. But who knows? we're trying. We're trying. Thank you to Nature's Heritage, Seeds Here Now, Sweet Leaf Nutrients, Excelsior Extracts. They all have deals for you guys as listeners for the show. I'm not going to go into all the details because, you know, I don't want to do the hard sell that way. But you know where to find the deals. Check all those companies out, support them, buy some merch, why not, you know. Check out our Patreon, we love that. And remember June 1st, the early bird tickets are on sale for the celebration in Brooklyn, the Grow Class Home Grow celebration, June 1st in Brooklyn, New York. And yeah, man, thank you, Mike. Thanks for listening, and this is 132. Let's put it in the books.